6:15, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Glad to be with you on this Wednesday morning here on WWL. Keep the text coming on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Well, we welcome in Robert Hogan, professor and department chair of political science at LSU. Good morning, professor. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. President Trump pretty excited about announcing a new trade deal with Japan late last night that allows more U.S. goods into Japanese markets and lowers the tariffs on Japan to 15%. Your thoughts on that as the whole tariff back and forth continues with nation after nation around the globe?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Trump promised many months ago, that he was going to renegotiate the trade deals the United States had with countries around the world in order to get a better deal for America. America was not getting the deal it should get. It was being cheated, as he often likes to say. And a lot of critics of the president have said it has taken a lot longer to make these trade deals as he had initially promised. And so he is able to come through and say, you know, at least on this country, there is in fact a trade deal in place, or is the framework of one that they're going to finalize in the coming weeks. It allows the president to say he's making progress. Of course, for Democrats and some of Trump's critics, even in his own party, are saying that this isn't happening quickly enough, and the concern is a lot of these really, really high tariffs that he imposed on countries might kick in and might be a drag on the economy if he doesn't, you know, act as swiftly as he needs to. So it's good news for the president, but probably not swift enough for those who are critical of him.
Yeah, he said overnight in a post on Truth Social that Japan will invest $550 billion in the U.S., and 90% of that will be profits for our country. He also said Japan will open their country to trade, including cars and trucks from America, rice, and other agricultural products. That's got to be exciting to the automakers and to the agricultural industry, because Japan is a huge market.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, having access to their markets is something that will help manufacturers here. I mean, the whole point of the tariffs is to make it where, it's people will want to do business with the United States, and it will make foreign goods less favorable for Americans to purchase. The whole point of the tariffs, I mean, he goes on and on about tariffs raising revenue. Of course, tariffs, they're imposed here in the United States, are really like taxes and are a drag on the economy, given that it affects consumers. A lot of what he's trying to achieve are long-term changes in what's going on. And so these are things that will probably, to the extent that they have benefits, it will be many years out before we actually are able to see those.
Yeah, you know, it's a risk-benefit analysis, I guess, and for many people, the pain is so intense here on the front end. Several reports now saying that major retailers like Amazon have cranked up prices 20 to 40% in line with the tariffs that have been placed on various countries around the globe by the Trump administration and by the president. But he is banking on the fact that ultimately this leads to lower prices, leads to more U.S. manufacturing, more foreign investment in the U.S., more U.S. jobs, and in the long run. But do Americans have the patience to wait it out while he goes nation to nation and tries to heavy-handedly force them to commit to better trade deals by threatening these huge tariffs?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is something that will take a large amount of time, and probably a lot longer than some people think. I mean, it's one thing to say we want to increase manufacturing in the country to produce goods that we sell abroad. It's another to actually have a company say, hey, this is something that's going to be profitable. We need to build a factory that builds these things. We need to hire workers. Those are things that take many years. And so if if these trade deals are meant to, if people are expecting these trade deals to immediately, with a the snap of a finger, to result in an economic blip on the gauge there, that is not what's going to happen. I mean, you're absolutely right. These are long term things that the president's putting in place, and it's going to take a long time to see any sort of benefit from that economically.
Yeah, it's not like the president says, hey, we can start selling cars and trucks in Japan now, and Detroit just suddenly opens a showroom in Japan and ships vehicles over there and starts selling them. They've got to be manufactured. They've got to be transported. There has to be an infrastructure for that. So it is detailed and time-consuming, and we shall see. We're talking with Robert Hogue, an LSU political science professor and chairman of the political science department, about the president and his popularity. When we get back, we'll talk about recent surveys on the president's popularity, as the surveyors saying that the president's lost significant numbers, but the White House pointing to the president being what they call the most popular Republican president in history within his party. What's the difference, and what does it all mean? We'll ask Professor Hogan that after we check on WWL traffic. We're under an extreme heat warning today, starting at 10 a.m., because the National Weather Service says conditions will create heat index values of up to 114. Already feels over 100 in several locations. But we also have heavy rain on the way. It's just off to our east, off the coast of Louisiana now, and that's going to continue with showers on and off today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and probably wrapping up before Sunday. So we'll watch all of that for you here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. Robert Hogan, the professor and the chairman of the political science department at LSU, is our guest. Professor, surveys out this week, polls of Americans showed that President Trump's approval rating has dipped about 10 points since February. But the White House says that's not a true illustration of what's happening, saying that 90 to 95% of Republicans still approve of the president, and they say that's what matters. They call him the most popular president with his party in American history. Tell us the difference between those two statistics and those two polling numbers we're seeing out there.
Yeah, I mean, what they're saying is I would not disagree with. I mean, it is true that he has great support within the Republican Party. I mean, it, regardless of what sort of issues face the president, even in the face of this Epstein scandal that is brewing, Republicans are staunchly supportive of the president. A lot of people like to say that Donald Trump has a low ceiling overall in terms of general popularity among the public overall, but has a high floor in that those Republicans are very supportive of him regardless of what happens. And indeed, if you look, over the past, or since he's, coming back into office in his second term here, he has had generally low approval rating. Right now it's sitting, it's in negative territory in the sense that more people disapprove of him than approve of him overall. It's about 53-44, 53 disapprove, 44 approve. But you have, again, a high number of people who are Republicans, who identify as Republicans, who say they are supportive of him. The last 2 weeks, you've seen a bit of a dip. Some people think that may be in response to Epstein. And that's one of the reasons that the Epstein issue is so critical for Trump, and why we see him attempting to change the message in the way that he has. Some of his core supporters are people who are very much in the category of voters who believe in a lot of these conspiracy theories. A lot of them were motivated to take part in the election because they felt that there was a cabal in control of the government, in which pedophiles were controlling parts of the government. And, Trump promised to get to the bottom of this. And he keeps saying they're going to do that. And, of course, with the Epstein files, his unwillingness to release those, I think, has had some of those core supporters. I don't know if they've moved away from him yet, but they're getting a little softer than they were. And this is
So interesting that the opposition's coming from both hardcore Republicans and staunch Democrats. But he has been successful in getting Speaker of the House Mike Johnson to back off, and they just went on break from Congress without taking up the Epstein files. What happens next?
Well, I mean, the question is he able to change the subject before Congress comes back into session in September? It did sort of mute the ability of the opposition or those who are concerned about Epstein to bring up the issue, but it's not certain that that's going to be something that's going to be sustainable going forward.
All right. So all summer long, we're probably going to hear more on the Epstein case, and we'll see how it all plays out. Professor, thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Coming up next half hour, Scoot will join us to talk about the legacy of Ozzy Osbourne. He's played concerts here in New Orleans several times, and now he has left this world. What's his legacy going to be? We'll talk more about the death of Ozzy Osbourne after the news. He has gone home for the last time. Osbourne, the Prince of Darkness, as he was known, died yesterday. You know, one thing amazing about Ozzy Osbourne is nearly everyone on the planet knows who he is. He was able to stay relevant for some five decades. I remember when I was in elementary school becoming familiar with Ozzy Osbourne after he bit the head off of a bat during a concert of Black Sabbath's. And since then, he has managed to keep himself relevant. Scoot from WWL, Scoot on the Air, was lucky enough to have the opportunity to interview Ozzy Osbourne and see him perform. I never got that opportunity, Scoot, but no matter what you thought of Ozzy Osbourne, he definitely was a master of keeping himself popular and relevant, wasn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, it was in early 2000 when the reality show The Osbournes came on, which I watched the original Osbournes every time it was on. I loved the show. That's what really turned him into a pop culture hero. You know, people had known him, but more people knew him from the reality show than actually knew his music. Because, you know, heavy metal is an interesting, very unique rock genre. And he was the Prince of Darkness. He did things, as you mentioned, like bit the head off a bat, but he did some other crazy things as well. So he was known and really was very influential. And people may not know this, but Ozzy was very influential in the role of the development of heavy metal. And he had this high-pitched screech that sort of became a signature element in heavy metal. He was kicked out of Black Sabbath in 1979 because of excessive drug and alcohol use. Now, I'm pretty sure those guys were doing drugs and alcohol.
Doesn't that typically go with heavy metal?
Well, yeah. I mean, to get kicked out because you did too much, he had to do a lot. Well, that's when he started his solo career. And by 1980, he had his own solo album, Blizzard of Oz, out. And Sharon really helped him with all of that. But sold 100 million albums and, you know, known in the heavy metal world, but also outside of that, mainly because of the show The Osbournes. He really became this cult hero in so many ways. And, you know, there's an interesting thing. In addition to biting the head off a bat, a lot of people don't know this, but in 1981, at a CBS Records executive meeting in Los Angeles, Ozzy was set to release a few doves as a gesture of peace. And he grabbed one of the doves and bit the head off of it. He spat the head out and had blood dripping off his lips. Of course, he was really drunk at the time. But this was at a CBS executive meeting. And then he's escorted out. He grabs a second dove and bites the head off of that. So
Who thought it was a good idea to have doves around Ozzy Osbourne at a meeting of CBS? Yeah, let's bring doves to the meeting as a gesture of the peace that we're trying to establish here. Yeah, it seems a little short-sighted to have doves and Ozzy in the same room at the same time. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that Keeping Up with the Osbournes, or was that the name? Whatever the reality show's name was really brilliant in exposing him to generations who had never really known much about Ozzy Osbourne, probably never listened to his music. I was riding in the car yesterday listening to Ozzy music with my wife and noted, you know, at the time, Ozzy Osbourne's music was said to be so irreverent, so heavy, so off the beaten path. But we listen to it today, and it doesn't sound that shocking.
Well, that's almost the way everything is. I mean, look at the Beatles' hair, you know. I mean, you look at it today and it's like, well, those are almost crew cuts. But back then, relative to the times, I mean, that was really bizarre. And, you know, Dave, you know, Ozzy was related to satanic worshiping, and his music represented satanic worshiping. And this was part of the interview that I did with him at the Pensacola Civic Auditorium when he was performing there. But Ozzy was actually a member of the Church of England, which is a Christian Protestant church, and he was said to pray before every show. So kind of like Alice Cooper, he had this onstage persona that was totally different from who he was offstage. And I got a chance to see that when I interviewed him. And one of the things that I talked to him about was, this was a time when there was a lot of controversy about his satanic music, and I asked him about the case where a teenager had committed suicide, and the parents were suing Ozzy and CBS Records, his record company, over the death of their son. The judge threw the case out, saying that there's no link between Ozzy's music and suicide, even though the song the kid was listening to was Suicide Solution. The problem is, the kid was listening to the same song over and over and over again, and I talked to Ozzy about this, and he said, Scoot, you know, Ozzy said that basically this kid had to be strung out on drugs or alcohol or both. That was his exact answer to me, and that the normal person is not going to just go commit suicide after listening to music. And he was right. It wasn't the music. It was other things that were going on with this kid, and that's why the judge threw the case out.
We're talking with Scoot. I want to talk more to him about his interview with Ozzy and what Ozzy said about biting the head off of a bat and how that became kind of the identifying incident for the rest of Ozzy's life. When we come back after this, talking to Scoot about the life and times of Ozzy Osbourne on WWL. Ozzy Osbourne died yesterday at the age of 76. His loved ones remember him as a dedicated family man. The world remembers him as the Prince of Darkness, who really pioneered the sound of heavy metal music and will forever be remembered for biting the head off a bat at a concert in Iowa. WWL Scoot on the Air was able to interview Ozzy years ago. What did Ozzy say about that bat-biting incident for which many people will forever remember him?
You know, he said he first reported that it was alive. You know, after he said it was alive and it bit me while I was biting the head off of it. Well, it turns out that wasn't true. That the guy who actually brought the bat to the concert said it was dead when he brought it there. So Ozzy bit the head off a dead bat, but he was taken to the hospital and went through the inoculation.
Rabies protocol, yeah.
Rabies protocol. Went through all of that just to make sure. But, he just said it was just one of those things that he just instinctively did and didn't really think much of it. And, again, you know, thinking about the times that he bit two heads off of doves, I mean, he was really into shock. And again, I kind of relate him to Alice Cooper, who was a lot more popular in terms of pop hits. You know, Ozzy was in the heavy metal genre, so he did have some hits. But he was known for doing crazy things. I mean, in 1982, Ozzy urinated on a memorial in front of the Alamo in San Antonio. Man, that is an iconic figure in downtown San Antonio. And he was immediately arrested. He was banned from performing in San Antonio for 10 years. He sincerely apologized, made a donation, and he got back into the good graces of the city. But he was intoxicated at the time. So, you know, Ozzy, I in some of his interviews, he was sober when he did the interview with me. But in a lot of interviews I've heard him do, he's basically incoherent. I mean, you couldn't even understand what the guy was saying. He was so drunk and strung out on drugs.
Yeah, part of his image, and one thing's for sure, he knew how to control his image, shock people, yep. Get attention, and for 76 years, the guy was able, at least the last 50 years, maintain crazy popularity and at least notoriety, if not popularity. Thank you, Scoot. We look forward to listening to you from 1 to 4 today and every afternoon on WWL.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. By the way, Ozzie said he thought the bat that a fan threw on the stage initially was rubber, and when he bit into it and realized it was real, he was shocked. But then he decided to use that to try and increase his popularity or notoriety. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. We'll be back after the news here on WWL.